To order, it is 2:10 on March 29th, 2012, and the following House members are present today: Representative Feige, Representative Pruitt, Representative Peterson, and myself, Representative Wilson. I'd like to recognize our staff today. Nancy Hemingway is the House Recording Secretary over in this side, and back that way is Sam, our LIO monitor. And my committee aide over here is Becky. So before we start, please turn off your cell phones. And thank you very much. And today we have one bill on the agenda, and that's House Bill 321, State Muni Airport Security Screening. And Representative Sisson is already sitting right in front of us. So would you please state your name and introduce your bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Sharon Sisna. I'm a state representative from District 22, which is from Anchorage, and it's the University Medical area of Anchorage. And I have with me my two staff. Mylana White is to my left, my far left, and in the center here is Mark Sable. And I'm going to have Miles Anna, who also goes by Anna, so if we accidentally get the two names in there, they're both her. And she would like to start with telling essentially what this bill is, and then Mark is going to follow by essentially telling us what this bill does, and then I'm going to say why. So that's going to be the structure of this this presentation, and we're talking about House Bill 321. And so, Anna, would you mind?
Thank you, Chair Wilson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna White, and I'm staff to Representative Sisna. Back in early December of last year, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Transportation Security Administration began the installation and use of full-body scanners at four Alaska hub airports. During the many months since the imposition of these new airport screening procedures, first in the lower United States and then in Alaska, constituents have complained of personal losses of carry-on items, embarrassment, harm to themselves and their necessary medical equipment, and of inappropriate touch and treatment by TSA personnel. Alaskans fly eight times more than the national average. In addition, TSA has greater impact on Alaskan transportation mobility, given our necessity to use commercial airlines for inter- and interstate Alaskan travel. HB 321 adds a new section to Alaska's uncodified law to require all Alaskan airports covered by the TSA screening to apply for participation in TSA's Screening Partnership Program, SPP, by December 31st of next year. Created by the federal government, the SPP application is a simple four-page form. Inclusion in the SPP allows airports to opt out from TSA hands-on management of screening by specifically enabling privatization of that function. It will return high-quality local control of security screening. The bill also requires the Alaska Department of Transportation to reimburse reasonable costs incurred by airports to complete the SPP application. Opting out of TSA by participating in SPP will enhance security, bring local oversight, local accountability, and local jobs to Alaskan residents at the state's key airports. Thank you.
And let the record show that Representative Gruenberg has joined us.
My apologies. I was unavoidably detained. I'll leave it at that.
For the record, my name is Mark Sable, aide to Representative Sharon Sisna, and Anna did a very good job with a little summary. What this bill does is asks or requires that the airports in this state that are covered by the TSA apply for something called the Screening Partnership Program. Screening Partnership Program, this is straight from the TSA. We, the TSA, develop the Screening Partnership Program, or SPP, to meet mandates outlined in the Aviation and Transportation Security Act. In order to benefit from private sector expertise and know-how, airports work in partnership with us to hire a qualified private screening company to provide screening services under federal oversight. And until very recently, there was a little reluctance within TSA to have this program operating. But if you'll see here, I got a great letter, just came out on the 13th of March from the U.S. House of Representatives, the Committee on Transportation Infrastructure, the Chairman Mica. He sent this out to, according to the website, all relevant airports. And the middle paragraph, given newly enacted changes to the SPP and the importance for good customer service and efficiency for airports and operators, the Act provides you with an opportunity to consider converting to a certified private screening operation. Our committee is pleased to offer our support should you consider such an action at your airport. And on the following page, second to last paragraph, I strongly encourage you to look closely at this program and to consider what participating in the SPP can do for your airport and for the travelers you serve. And last sentence in that same paragraph, in addition, security will not be compromised while screening costs and oversight will continue to be the responsibility of the TSA. So, the state would not, we got a fiscal note, the state would not incur expense. And we do have a copy of the application here and new instructions. It's a new version that was just released this month. So it's a very simple four-page application. One page is basically a signature page. And there's this little letter template on it, too. So the instructions are here. I kept going back with it again and again and again because instructions only cover a single sheet of paper front and back. Very simple. Once a private screening company is approved, they can then take over screening under the supervision, but control will be back with Alaska Companies. And it says in here that the on the application they can recommend, the airports can recommend who they would like to see, though they're not required to, nor is the government required to accept that recommendation, but it's there. And Representative Mica says that he would like to see further enhancements by allowing airports control of who they would like to hire for private screening. We have a list of the airports in here in the state that are covered by TSA. As you can see, most of them are owned by the Alaska State Department of Transportation, and with the three exceptions, Red Dog, well, that's a little, you can't get a ticket to Red Dog, it's a mine. So it's Ketchikan and Juneau. So no real cost to state, zero fiscal note. This would be pro-Alaska business, return control to Alaskans, and I really don't see a downside to this. That's my testimony.
State Representative speaking now. And why? And the reason that this bill does offer an option that gives a change to what we've seen at the airports here in Alaska so far, and of course it's only been since early in December that we've seen the not the full body scan, the x-ray process that people go through, continue to be problems with some of the people who have spoken nationally in the media to Congress are saying that there may be health problems with that form of screening as well. The big problem that exists is with TSA, which are under the Department of Homeland Security, but they essentially do not get oversight by either Congress or the Homeland Security because of an agreement that happened somewhere in the mid 2000, the first decade of our century, and because of that, we really don't have a really good idea of exactly of real proof on what kinds of problems might exist we know about it, and that's where I see myself as probably, I hate to say an authority, but I think it comes pretty close to that, because I had my own personal experience, and I was public about it, and because of that, I have, and just figured this out this last weekend, in the first few weeks, we got about 1,000 emails and calls and letters from people telling their stories and saying why they thought it was important. Since that time, it's been many weeks, it's more than a year, and we figured approximately another 1,000 letters, calls, people talking to me in the stores. It's really, there's very few days go by that I'm not hearing another story. And one of the things that appears to be very consistent here is the inconsistencies of exactly what people are getting in different airports. Now, in the very early days, right after 9/11 happened, and that's why we are doing the kind of security screening that we're doing now, is because of the horror that came with that, with the understanding that we have people who are out to get us, and there was a real effort at knowing that we needed to do a better job of security. And so the TSA was put in place. They may have been there before. To be honest, I don't remember that part. But what I do know is that Congress knew there needed to be, kind of almost in the way of competition, that there needed to be both the TSA that had their procedures, that were doing what they were doing, and that you wanted to have private airports that had the TSA there watching what they did, but also seeing if maybe what they did wasn't better. And so that was the program that actually started what Mark to my left mentioned, which is the SPP program. And there was, at that time, that was a pilot program. After several years, that pilot program was made to be a program that the federal government made available for any airport that wanted to privatize. They were given an application. Now, the application you see in this document is actually an extraordinarily newly revised application. The application that was given with the federal government's decision that it was now time for them to exist and for TSA to run their programs, TSA's administrator, Administrator Pistoli, would get various applications, but over these number of years since then, he's never approved any of them. And Congress finally came in touch with that. This is after this bill was written. So it's very recent that Congress finally had hearings on this whole issue, just came through with approval to demand that TSA actually make those applications be accepted unless the airport couldn't prove that they could do an equally good job or better, and that there weren't any handicaps with them doing that. So this is the form that you're looking at is the one that has been approved just recently. It's got the passage and the president's signature on it, and TSA has been told to do it. It doesn't change the fact that TSA is going to have a person. Actually, they usually don't send one. They usually send a group. But nonetheless, there will be definitely a partnership there where they're making sure that this airport, whichever one it is done in a professional, good way. Back to the fact that I've had all these people talking to me and telling me their stories. It's unimaginable how many different things that I have heard happening at airports throughout the country, and now, in the last couple months, what I'm hearing happening here. And I didn't think we would have the same kind of thing, but I've been hearing at at least the two stories I've heard of the most are from our Anchorage airport and from the municipal airport here in Juneau. And things are happening. Things are sometimes stolen. Things are removed from the from their hands. Things are, if they hand the wallet to the personnel, sometimes things are missing from, and I'm hearing this in my office, people having just arrived here. This is really kind of wild. And the kinds of touch that has a real traumatic effect on anybody who's been through any trauma. And this state is the trauma center of, well, we're the Arctic state. So we are the place where it's the hardest place to live, where you're going to have the most dangerous jobs and the hardest conditions. So our people have been through a lot. And the kind of touch that they're being put in through at the airport is really, really traumatic. What this can do, and this is the why that's the important part here, is that why this is really critical in my thinking is that at an airport, for instance, Prudhoe Bay, actually we have an Alaskan company that actually does the security for Prudhoe Bay. And so we do have the talent in the state. There's certainly many other, there's other corporations that have been developed in Alaska that are doing security outside of Alaska. So I know that the ability exists here. But what's more important, the local oversight, thinking in terms of nationwide, is done by the Department of Transportation. And you wind up privatizing to local companies who have people who've lived here, people who are from Alaska, who really understand exactly what Alaskans go through. And they will have that oversight of the Department of Transportation, make positive the training is the kind of training that keeps people from losing contact with their value system. And this is what I think happens with some of the personnel who are touching in a way that they've been taught for their whole lives that it's not acceptable to touch that way. And studies that have been done at universities have shown that when people are acting in ways that they don't personally believe in, it can create some really bizarre behaviors. And I think that's part of what we see at the airports. And I think if the supervision is done correctly, many airports throughout the country are doing it right, because the conversations I have are people telling me of airports where they never have a problem or where they've had a couple problems. But they've gotten perfect treatment at other places that supposedly are under the same regulations. So what we have here is the ability with this number of airports that are going to come under this. We've only got four airports now, but we will have about another 20, as I understand it. They'll get the kind of help and supervision to make sure that we do it right here. And if we do it right, it gives a local control that isn't happening in a lot of states that have tried to privatize. We come in right now with the ability to do this, and it could have been, we could have done this, we could have passed this before Congress acted on this, and it would have been turned down. The chances are much likelier because of where we are, the people we serve, and the kinds of conditions that Alaskans have to travel in. We're different than any other state, and we need to be thinking about our people and how this affects them. And this is the potential of a very good answer. And so, thank you.
Representative Sisna, the title says an act requiring certain airports in the state to apply for the federal requiring that they apply for the federal screen opt-out program. So why are we making them apply for an opt-out program?
For the reasons I spoke of, and it really is basically that we're different than any other state, that our people go through, we travel 8 times. So every time that Alaskans travel, especially out of state, and I think all of us have had experiences when we've been traveling out of state, and the chances are we're going, it's hard to go that far, so you might as well go visit somebody else and get some other meeting in at the same time you're going. That means that it's not only 8 times the national average that you're getting on that flight to go somewhere, but in that flight, you're going to be stopping at numerous airports. And there are some of those airports you're not going to have a problem, and there are some of those airports you may be very surprised. And if you're not surprised yet, I can't give you a guarantee that you won't be eventually.
But we don't have any control of that. Those are outside of the state.
That's right. That's right. And actually, there is another bill that I cannot speak about that is in a committee that I can't speak about that actually is addressing the huge concern, and that is that in state governments across the country, this is a nationwide problem, in state governments, huge percentage of them have laws on touch and sexual actions, and what's illegal in terms of that. And in our state, in huge percentages of these other states, the way that the TSA employees are told to touch are illegal. And we actually have several thousand people on our lists on the internet that have touched people in the same way that you're being touched at the airport. I've been there. So it really is, it is immoral touch. Now, the reason is for security. Mm-hmm. Now, that's another debate, because we have not had one person in the United States in the last 10 years that have gotten on a plane in the United States with anything that came close to explosive. There were two that came from other countries, and they were caught by passengers on the plane. But we have 10 years of zero cases where the TSA has caught someone, or, and for that matter, we haven't had any cases where someone tried to get on a plane with explosive devices or trying to do any real damage. So that's why there is some real problem here for many states, because what they're seeing is people like myself who had a problem when I was 13 and dealt with it becoming hyper-vigilant and watched everybody around me at all times for actually probably the rest of my life. And that is a mental health issue, but we have numbers of people who've had other kinds of issues. They've been touched in ways and lost things, had damage to them, and it's over, and it's 2000 that I can point to personally. And I've got to tell you that I actually carry a burden on that one, because I feel responsible, because as a state government, theoretically, because federal law trumps us, we can't do anything. But this actually would give us a doorway in here to at least make sure the administrative procedure lessens the impact and gets away from people who can't handle touching the way they have gone into ways that are unbelievable, that go beyond even what they have as legal.
Okay, and I'm going to ask another question, because on the second page, it says, on line 3, it says, subject to appropriation. So in other words, you are going to require every municipality that has that would fit in the description to we're going to make them apply for this, and so they're going to have to do it, and yet there's no guarantee that they will get the money.
We do have the department's representative here. It is what we have found, and what Mark Scope did Sable, pardon me, did mention was the fact that the Department of Transportation has given a zero fiscal note because it is covered after the application. It is covered entirely by TSA.
Okay, so how? But so the only thing that's covered by TSA is that there was no cost for the for applying for the application.
Now the catch on that, do you want to answer that or yeah or wait? Well, the big thing here is that we're unusual as a state because we have so many of our airports that are actually owned by a Department of Transportation. And then we have municipal here and in Ketchikan. There's several others that are privately, or they're run by municipalities. But none of those get rent or there's no, for a TSA screening, there's nothing that goes back to the airports. They come in, their cost is going to be in personnel, equipment, that kind of stuff. But the airport actually does make room for TSA, and it doesn't charge TSA or anybody else.
Okay, but I'll ask the department then when they come, unless you want to add more to that.
Park Sable, once again, Chairwoman. Department probably could answer it better, but basically it's a contractual arrangement between the private screeners and the TSA. And I've got other references, but the easiest one I came up with was this New York Times article from really in the month, the 16th. On the second page, the private screeners will follow TSA guidelines and fall under its supervision, although the agency will not conduct the private screeners training. Hopefully we can add more sensitivity to our people as opposed to federal employees. Next sentence, the TSA will pay for the private screeners. So we're not talking about much of an expense to the state. It's a contractual arrangement between private contractor, meaning the security company, and the federal government.
So essentially what we're doing is putting the extra cost on the federal government.
No, it's not extra cost. It's a transfer of cost. Their own people versus private contractors. And there's a wonderful report which is included, and it goes through, and it's actually, I think, it's a 40-some page report. This is the executive summary, where it details the potential cost savings to the federal government from the implementation of security partnership programs.
Well, I guess what I can't envision then in my mind is that we're going to have private people doing it, but TSA is still going to have to be there supervising. So that means there's going to be more people than there normally would be.
And Madam Chair, Sharon Sisson speaking. The interesting part there is that we are talking about an agency that makes something in several billion dollars a year. And it really does have a huge number of employees. And they are at airports. And when you've been to those airports, you've looked in there and you've seen huge numbers of people in uniform, sometimes more than the people going through, oftentimes more than the people going through. So that apparently is not something, well, apparently it isn't so far. We're not seeing, I've not heard any indication that it costs us more than probably some. I would agree with you. It's got to cost us something. But training, and it would be, in many cases, making sure that the private
companies that get the contract, that might be part of the contract, is making positive the training fits to what we have. I don't, you know, this is kind of the detail that has not, I don't know yet, but it is a contract and it is being paid for by the TSA themselves that seem to have very deep pockets.
But who would be doing the training?
Well, and that, I think the department might be able to speak.
Oh, TSA. TSA does the training. However, I think that what we can do, is it possible to...
Come forward. Because if TSA is... I'm just trying to figure this out. If TSA is doing the training, they're already doing the training, and you're not happy with that.
I'm not happy, personally, the outcome. And sometimes in management, outcomes change with who's doing the administration.
Okay.
Now, am I close?
Brenda Hewitt, legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And it is my understanding from talking to our staff that TSA contracts with the outside contractor. They train them and the procedures. And so as far as the costs are concerned, it's the same.
But how are we going to, if they're doing the training, how is it going to end up different than it is now?
You just have different people.
How do we know it's going to be different people?
Well, I think we don't probably have all of the people here that we should have here to answer your questions, which are good questions. But what I know is that when you bring people in to, and I was self-employed for 27 years, and I had people, I did outsourcing, and I did, is there? Must have gotten some numbers wrong. Sorry about that. But basically, contracts, and the contract may be with TSA, but the Department of Transportation will be who chooses the people who will be the firms that fill the role of, you're not going to be the ones that do it. It's private people. San Francisco's airport, for instance, was one that privatizes, and they get significantly fewer complaints from the public. It's significantly faster passage through the security area, and it's significantly less cost to TSA because of the way they do it. And this is true of, I think there's something like 20 different airports that... Okay, 18 different. And so what I know is we're at the beginning of a process. If, in fact, this becomes law, then they're given until, I think it's March of, or something like that, of 2013. So it's more than a year. We have the forms there. You can look at the forms. I went through and started kind of pretending as if I was a private contractor and trying to fill out the form. And the real catch here is the one that's going to be the most difficult. The question's the most difficult is you selling the people who are going to read this why you're so much better than what they would be. Now that'll take some thought. But I think I don't think a year is...
Well, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so if we privatized or opted out of the federal TSA screeners, would we as a state be allowed to set up criteria that was allowed that might be different than what's currently being used to search people or to screen people? So could we set up our own methods, or it has to meet the minimum requirement by TSA, or what's the situation with that?
It's
It's my understanding that TSA...
Excuse me, Brenda from Transportation again. It's my understanding that TSA has the criteria that has to be met. They're the ones that contract with them. And so it really it's just a matter of who wears the shirt. However, I would think that if you're hiring somebody that's private, you're probably hiring somebody from Alaska, which may make your difference. I don't know.
Yeah, and I have a really, if you don't mind, Sharon Cisna, I have a really strong belief that we can, with the people that fill those roles, we can put screening in place so that we don't have pedophiles being hired. And right now there's no information you can find. TSA does not have open reports. There's no third-party oversight. So there's no way to know if TSA's employee that's touching you isn't someone who's has an arrest record on that. And some of the things I've been told indicate to me that there's some people there that have problems.
Representative Peterson, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the reason I was asking that, because you mentioned that they're able to move more people through more quickly in San Francisco, I believe was the example. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that maybe if they had decided that they weren't going to search people in wheelchairs or babies on those type of situations, then they would actually kind of slows things down if you've ever been going through security and they start, you know, searching somebody in a wheelchair, it takes a pretty long time. And those are the type of thing that has a tendency to slow that way down. And, I mean, so if you could use a little more common sense and judgment, and, I mean, for some woman who's got a six-month-old baby with her, the likelihood that she's going to strap a bomb to that baby are, I mean, there's not enough zeros to tell you what that percentage is. It's that small. So I think common sense judgment like that might be what would cause the lines to go much quicker and the searches be less intrusive.
That's right. And Madam Chair, if I might also say that the employees themselves, what we've seen is that they do not, they're not trained for medically needy people who may have contagious disease, people who have just come out of surgery. This happens a lot for Alaskans. That's one of the things other states don't often have, because we're traveling to the advanced hospitals, the advanced institutions that other people can drive to. And so our people, and we've gotten comments made in our forums from people in rural Alaska saying that bandages have been taken off, that fingers have been put into where there's obviously open wounds, seeing if there's anything, any contraband in the open wounds. I mean, there's been a huge number of things like that. I think that if you're running a local kind of airport process, that in fact it will be done better. But more than that, one of the things that we've seen with this bill is Congress has come in, they've been rather slow at looking because the cost is astounding. It's multi-billion dollars on this program. They're beginning to see that, and just listened last night to Democracy Now!, and it's a radio program, and they were doing a study of kind of some of the problems that TSA has had and the costs and what Congress is doing. So it's a really hot topic right now in Congress. We've gotten things just since we've been here in the last number of weeks that weren't available before. Reports to Congress, hearings, listening to some of the hearings that Congress is doing. So my suspicion is that if we privatize, what we might wind up doing is what
Possibly if TSA doesn't change, the laws they work under may change, and what we may wind up doing is actually giving the state of Alaska more local jobs, more jobs that actually are paid for by the federal government, and it's people in Alaska that have those jobs, and I think that's a positive.
Well, I know in my town, and I can only go by my town, but my town, all of the TSA people are local people. Representative Munoz, you had some questions?
Thank you. Are the TSA employees unionized?
You know, there was the discussion about that, and as I recall, we're at the point where I think it's Congress that's actually trying to figure out if, in fact, that should be the case. But it is something that's being talked about, because if, in fact, and I've heard from union people here saying that if, in fact, they're unionized, then they have to deal with the union representatives, and it would start opening up the whole thing, which would be a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Go ahead.
Once again, Mark Sable for Representative Assistance Aid. Along that question, I would like to refer you to this report once again from the U.S. Committee on Transportation Infrastructure. And
what page?
Page 3, item number 9. I'll provide some clarity. And the top sentence, there is evidence that the TSA officials erroneously claimed no communication with union representatives about the SPP. So
what does that mean? Are they trying to become unionized, or are they currently unionized?
I don't know. This was written June of 2011. So the current status, I can't say for sure.
Okay, I just have a couple more questions.
And you go ahead with your questions.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Of the, let's see, you said four operating programs, airports that have private programs, were those four approved through this SPP process?
There are 16 airports currently 16, nationwide.
Okay. Were they approved through this TSA process? I mean, it's called the screening opt-out process.
No. For instance, the Juneau Airport, I was able to
talk. I'm sorry.
Pardon me, Sharon. The Juneau Airport is a municipal airport. The Ketchikan Airport, I don't think it's municipal. I think it's something other than municipal, but it's not run by the Department of Transportation. And they...
I meant nationally, the four or five airports that you've mentioned in your presentation that opted out, were they San Francisco you used as an example?
Yes.
Were they approved through this SPP process?
And initially they were approved because that was started right alongside of the operations that TSA did right after 9/11. And they were put in place to be that check you need to have when you've got a very comprehensive program that might be controversial. You want to
on that point then, are they demonstrating cost savings, those four or five examples, and do you know about roughly what the cost comparison is?
I don't know all of them, and I think I could probably find it, but I'd be happy to send all of the studies that I've seen on to you.
I'm just curious.
Boxes.
Does TSA have the authority then to deny an application?
It is Administrator Pistoli that makes the decision, period.
Okay, so
and he no longer...
To opt out with our state-owned facilities, not our municipal-owned, because you mentioned we have some municipal-owned facilities.
I think it'd be all airports, is my understanding.
The way the bill is written, it asks us to do all of them. I'm sorry, Brenda Hewitt from the Department of Transportation, Public Facilities, through the chair. Representative Munoz,
the bill asks us to do, there are 21 of these airports in Alaska that get TSA screening. 18 of them are the states, and 6 of them are municipal. And the bill is asking us to apply for all of them at this point.
Okay. So, so once we make that application, we're not guaranteed a positive response.
Through the chair, my understanding is if this program is reinstated, no, we still aren't guaranteed that.
Any other questions? Thank you. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. Ms. Hewitt, how does the department feel about doing this?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, if the legislature directs us to do the opt-out program, we will apply for the opt-out program. But this is a federal program, and so it doesn't necessarily affect the department. We just have to make sure that we have screening.
I see. Okay. But it's not vehemently opposed to. Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just thought of one more thing. I read somewhere or saw a report somewhere that said they are creating a program where individuals can fill out a background check and that they will be able to qualify to get some sort of card so that when you go to the lines at the airports, you flash your card and you can walk around the screening device. And are there large numbers of people that are doing that? And is that something that we might encourage Alaskans to do more of or communicate with Alaskans so they know that program is available?
And thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Peterson. Alaskans really should be encouraged to fill out those forms. I've not had really great success myself in all of the different comments that have been made to me. In hearing that people have gotten cards, they've gotten letters from their doctors, they've gotten all kinds of things talking about conditions they have that are ignored by that worker. So it's hard to know in terms of, is this a program that really is in place right now and is really putting out cards? I think that people who can should. I mean, that's a good idea if there's a way for them to get around it. But we're in Alaska. We're in the place where people travel far more than they do anywhere else, and they come from places where they sometimes take 2 or 3 larger and larger vehicles. It might be a boat to a place where they can get a plane, where they get to Anchorage, where they can get out of here, or any of those crazy combinations. And so there are going to be places where you can't get a driver's license, let alone one of these TSA forms. It's also a matter, what we all know is that educating the public on something like this is a really tough thing to do. And it's hard in many cases to get new laws understood around the state. So I think that maybe eventually this is something that could happen. But what I'm seeing is day by day we have numbers of people that are being affected. And I'm feeling an enormous amount of personal pressure in terms of trying to make sure that we're getting help out there. And this is something that would give us, not immediate because we're talking more than a year away, but it would give us something that we can be certain of. And the other thing is, not, I haven't heard anything, nobody's given me anything that gives information that I could send out to people. I would right away if they did.
Any other questions? Is there anyone online that wants to speak? Representative Cisna, I set aside this whole meeting just for this because you told me there would be we probably wouldn't have room to hear all the testimony. And I really feel that most of the testimony we've gotten is more or less supposition, and as far as what the rules are from TSA. And so I would set this bill aside, and I feel that we need some experts to tell us exactly how it would be and how it would be run. In other words, probably somebody from TSA at the top that could explain this to us, because we're all kind of guessing at what they would do and what we would do, and you understand what I'm saying? So let's see if we can get someone that can really tell us exactly how this would work, and then I think that maybe we need to work a little bit on how we would make this work. If the state is going to make the municipalities do this, and there's no guaranteed that it because it says it's subject to the appropriation of the legislature. So TSA would pay them back, but if they do things different than TSA does, and we don't know for sure if TSA would let us do that. So there's some unknown things here. So if you can maybe not have them be here, but if you could get those questions answered from them so that we, would they let us do things different, or would we still have to go exactly by their rules? That would be one question. Would they get total reimbursement to the municipality? And if the department is going to have to do some training, would they do the training, or could we as a state do the training? So those are some questions, I think. Until we know those answers, we don't know for sure what the fiscal note is. And we don't know, I think it's pretty hard for us to guess on what we're coming up with, because we don't know the answers yet. So if you could do that and get back with me so that we can discuss this, because we just, I think there's too many unknown things right now. Representative Munoz?
If you plan to hear the bill again, it would be helpful to have somebody from TSA available to answer questions.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we can do that, but the big question is that is something that would take a great deal of effort to do. I'd be more than happy to do it if, in fact, it can be heard again. We've got, I think, until the 4th, am I correct, in order to do something like that, and is there the time to actually have me put that together? I'd be happy to do it.
I don't know. I thought that you would have somebody here that would give us this information.
Madam Chair, we're talking about something that is happening to our people at our airports right this minute, and Congress has been sitting on this for a full year, not doing much at all, and they're beginning to do something. We're talking about Congress, and they're not really there yet. I'm trying to figure a way that the state itself can move into this game and say, we're going to try to protect our people in every way we can. This gives us something that I'm fairly positive that the federal government will pay for, because TSA has the program. Congress has gotten, we can get the law to you that shows that they actually have said that it's possible to do. Getting the authorities here that could answer this.
Well, they don't have to be here. They can be online.
It's one person, actually.
I want to just know if it's possible. No. I want to know if we have to go totally by their rules, and if they have to do the training, or if we can do it. If we can't, then there's no point. So we need to have some answers.
Can I speak to you later about this very thing and let me check?
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Any other questions or any other? Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, this is a free-flowing conversation between the two of you at the moment. And I'm just wondering, Mark, maybe you can make certain that the question's understood so you can try to get this done. Thank you. You don't have to respond.
Well, through the chair, I will absolutely do my best to aid Representative Sista in acquiring answers to any questions this committee poses.
Part of it is I generally see where you're going. I'm not totally sure that it's totally fleshed out. And if I can be of any help, let me know.
Okay. I guess we're, since this is the only bill that we have, we will adjourn. And actually, let me see, on Tuesday, trying to see if my staff has got, I guess we don't have, we will meet next Tuesday. Don't we have some? Oh, yeah. We'll meet next Tuesday and take up House Bill 212 again.
What is it? Oh, that's, yes, we're trying to get some language together on the last amendment, working on that.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.